Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, December 23rd, 2024. And I'm going to start on the front page here and move to sports, probably in the second half. We'll see how it goes. We have a lot of national and international news today with just a smidgen of local. So I'm going to start on the front page here with a big feature story with an education focus. The headline reads, "Alternative education students graduate, including first of new Option 3 program." And there's a photo here of a woman with a graduation balloon behind her, and the caption reads, "Dejanay Fain takes photos with her children, Demaria Crawford, who's one, and Demarion Crawford, 5 months after high school graduation from Foundations, an alternative education program in Decatur, on Friday." And that photo is by Joseph Ressler of the Herald and Review. And this story is from Valerie Wells. "Finishing high school with two small children to raise was not easy, but Dejanay Fain did it with the help of her family and Foundations, an alternative education program for pregnant and parenting teen girls through Baby Talk. As the young mom went up to accept her certificate at Friday's graduation ceremony, she scooped up both her babies and held them as families took photos of the graduates. Her next move, she said, is to attend Richland Community College and pursue a career in nursing. The Macon Pyatt Regional Office of Education oversees several alternative education programs which provide paths to graduation for students for whom traditional high school isn't working. The newest of those programs, Option 3, graduated its first student on Friday, too, Patrick Antzak. We have really motivational teachers, and that helps a lot," Antzak said. "They want to see their students succeed. They never give you false hope. They continue to push you and never let you give up on yourself." Option 3, said Regional Superintendent Jill Reedy, is for students aged 14 to 18 who don't qualify for Futures Unlimited. For Futures, a credit recovery program, a student must be at least 16 and have a minimum number of 8 to 10 credits. For students who are further behind that, like Antzak was, Option 3 offers small classes, one-on-one attention, social-emotional learning, and even transportation. The goal is to move the students into Futures or back into their home school. The pandemic derailed a lot of students, said Antzak's mother, Esther Brady. Going back to traditional school after so long in remote learning meant that some kids couldn't adjust and might have given up. Option 3 is definitely a need for this community, Brady said. Kids are thriving when they go there. They have hope, they have support, they have everything they need to make it. Antzak plans to pursue a career as a firefighter, police officer, or emergency medical technician. He hasn't decided which one yet, Brady said. He's exploring all three and checking out available training programs before he makes up his mind. We were discovering that there were students who had barriers getting to school, Reedy said. Our truancy officer was reaching out to kids who, whether it was due to anxiety issues or from the pandemic, they just had not returned to school and were not engaged anywhere. We started identifying these kids, and we thought these are kids who were not comfortable even going to alternative school. Futures focuses on kids who have fallen behind academically, while Milligan Academy is for students with behavioral issues. Kids who don't quite fit either program needed a third option, Reedy said, which is where Option 3 comes in. It's small, with 13 students and two teachers, and students spend the morning on academics and the afternoon on social-emotional learning. Mental health is a real issue among young people now, Reedy said, and those afternoon sessions give them a place to learn coping skills and find support. It kind of catches that a group of students that we've been wanting to develop that program and get them over here, said Option 3 Director Crystal Whetstone. I'm going to move on now to U.S. government-focused news here. We have a headline. This is an Associated Press story by Lisa Mascaro with the headline, "Shutdown Saga Exposes New Fault Lines for Speaker Johnson and Tests His Grip on the Gavel." One of the most turbulent sessions of Congress in the modern era is about to make way for the next one. Midnight passage of the government shutdown package put in sharp focus the political fault lines emerging in Washington as President-elect Donald Trump returns to the White House. House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican from Louisiana, fights for his job, and Republicans sweep into control of Congress in the new year. It took bipartisan votes to keep government running for a few more months and provide about $100 billion for disaster aid. Working together, the Republicans and Democrats showed the House and Senate can still function to accomplish the basics of governing. After a chaotic few days in the House, it's good news that the bipartisan approach in the end prevailed, said Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York. It's a good lesson for next year. Both sides have to work together. But next year, with big GOP promises to cut taxes and slash spending, while also pumping in new money to fund Trump's border security and deportation operations, Republicans intend to go it alone. "We're set up for a big and important new start in January," Johnson said. "We can't wait to get started." The first vote of the new House, when lawmakers are sworn in January 3rd, is on electing a speaker. That leaves Johnson little time to calm the criticism after facing stark blowback over his management of the government shutdown fight. He was never the House Republicans' top choice for the speaker's office, but emerged when they couldn't agree on a replacement once they kicked out the last speaker, Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California. The government shutdown saga exposed the limits of Johnson's influence over his majority and Trump when his first two funding plans collapsed. It's unclear if Johnson will have enough support from his ranks. "It's always the big question, right?" said Representative Tim Burchett, a Republican from Tennessee, among the handful of mainly fiscal conservatives who cast their votes to oust McCarthy. "Ultimately, and let's be honest, that's going to be a large portion of that will be up to Donald J. Trump." Yet Johnson was able to buy time, convincing Trump he would meet the president-elect's demands to raise the debt limit in the new year. He worked hard to stay close to Trump, and the investment shows. Johnson insisted Trump was certainly happy with the final deal. "The speaker did a good job here, given the circumstances," posted Trump ally Elon Musk, who was mentioned as a potential replacement, since the speaker does not need to be a member of Congress. Johnson has no votes to spare, having actually lost House seats in the fall election, shrinking his majority. Democrats will oppose him with their own speaker candidate, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York. "Clearly, Johnson is not up to the task," Trump ally and podcast provocateur Stephen Bannon said at a conservative conference. "He doesn't have what we call the right stuff, that combination of guts and moxie and savvy and toughness." Musk, the world's richest man, is fast becoming Capitol Hill's most feared influencer. He intervened in the government shutdown debate using the enormous power of his social media platform, X, to ravage Johnson's original 1,500-page bipartisan bill, swiftly tearing it down. In post after post, he unleashed criticisms and sometimes inaccurate claims, sending his army of online followers to figuratively flood the Capitol, warning that if lawmakers voted for it, he would take them on with primary elections. His vast wealth and America PAC backed up his threats. "Kill the bill," Musk demanded. Democrat after Democrat and at least one Republican turned on Musk, seeing not a benevolent billionaire wading into the political process, but a symbol of extreme U.S. wealth and power run amok. Senator Bernie Sanders, the Vermont Independent, decried the health care and other bipartisan provisions stripped from the bill to scale it back as Musk demanded. "The precedent that has been set today in Congress should upset every American," Sanders said in a statement announcing his refusal to support the final bill. He voted against it. "It appears that from now on, no major legislation can be passed without the approval of the wealthiest person in this country," Sanders said. "That's not democracy, that's oligarchy." One of the most outspoken conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus is Representative Chip Roy, Republican from Texas, who led the charge against Trump's demand for a debt limit hike as part of the government shutdown package. It's very unpopular. Congressman from Texas, Chip Roy, is getting in the usual In the way, as usual, Trump posted on social media, he suggested there should be a primary challenge against Roy. Republican obstructionists have to be done away with, he said. Roy, though, has his own popular following as a leading deficit hawk. He held his own, ignoring Trump's attack and admonishing his colleagues not to go along with Trump's demand to boost the debt ceiling and allow more borrowing. You go out and campaign, say you're going to balance the budget, and then you come in here, he shouted, choking up at times during the floor debate. It's embarrassing. In the end, 38 House Republicans, including Roy, sided with Democrats and tanked Trump's debt ceiling increase. Republicans will have to raise the debt ceiling in the first half of the year, and there will be a large price to pay. As part of the deal Johnson made to pass the temporary government funding package, he struck a gentleman's agreement behind closed doors with his fellow Republicans ahead of Friday's vote. House Republicans agreed to slash about $2.5 trillion from federal spending over the next decade as part of the emerging tax cut bill in exchange for boosting the debt limit, as will need to happen to avoid a federal default. Our final story on the front page of the Decatur Herald and Review is a holiday travel-focused story. This is an Associated Press story by David Koenig with the headline, 2024 Holiday Travel, Busiest Days, Weather Outlook, and More. And there's a photo here of travelers attaching tags to their bags after checking in at the United Airlines counter at Denver International Airport on Saturday. Drivers and airline passengers without reindeer and sleighs better make a dash for it. It's beginning to look like another record for holiday travel in the U.S. The Auto Club AAA predicted that more than 119 million people will have traveled at least 50 miles from home between Saturday, December 21st, and New Year's Day, which would top the previous holiday season high set in 2019. The two weekends on either side of Christmas look to be some of the most crowded times on the road and at airports. Trade group Airlines for America also foresees record travel, saying it expected U.S. airlines to carry 54 million passengers during a 19-day period that started Thursday and ends Monday, January 6th. The number would represent a 6% increase over last year. Airlines expected to have their busiest days on Friday and Sunday and on December 26th, 27th, and 29th. Flight traffic is expected to be light on both Christmas Day and New Year's Day. The slowest U.S. air travel day this year, by a wide margin, was Thanksgiving Day. The Transportation Security Administration expects to screen 40 million passengers over the holidays and through January 2nd. About 90% of Americans traveling far from home over the holidays will be in cars, according to AAA. Airline travel is just really high right now, but most people do drive to their destinations, and that is true for every holiday, AAA spokesperson Asia Diaz said. Gasoline prices are similar to last year. The nationwide average Thursday was $3.05 a gallon, down from $3.08 a year ago, according to AAA. Charging an electric vehicle averages just under 35 cents per kilowatt hour, but varies by state. Transportation data firm INRIX said travel times on the nation's highways could be up to 30% longer than normal over the holidays, with Sunday expected to see the heaviest traffic. Boston, New York City, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. are the metropolitan areas primed for the greatest delays, according to the company. Because the holiday travel period lasts weeks, airports and airlines typically have smaller peak days than they do during the rush around Thanksgiving. But the grind of one hectic day followed by another takes a toll on flight crews. And any hiccups, a winter storm or a computer outage, can snowball into massive disruptions. That's how Southwest Airlines stranded 2 million travelers in December 2022, and Delta Airlines suffered a smaller but significant meltdown after a worldwide technology outage in July caused by a faulty software update from cybersecurity company CrowdStrike. Many flights during the holidays are sold out, which makes cancellations even more disruptive than during slower periods. That is especially true for smaller budget airlines that have fewer flights and fewer options for rebooking passengers. Only the largest airlines, including American, Delta, and United, have interline agreements that let them put stranded customers on another carrier's flights. This will be the first holiday season since a Transportation Department rule took effect that requires airlines to give customers an automatic cash refund for a canceled or significantly delayed flight. Most air travelers were already eligible for refunds, but they often had to request them. Passengers can still ask to get rebooked, which is often a better option than a refund during peak travel periods. That's because finding a last-minute flight on another airline yourself tends to be very expensive. When they rebook you, they will pay for the fare difference. If my flight to visit grandma that I booked up 6 months ago for $200 gets canceled, and I turn around and book a flight 4 hours from now for $400, I have to pay that difference, said Sally French, a travel expert at consumer affairs company NerdWallet. People traveling on budget airlines with fewer flights and no partnerships with other carriers may face a difficult choice in the event of a canceled flight. They will put you on the next outgoing Spirit or Frontier flight, but that could be a while from now. Sometimes waiting 3 days for that next flight is not going to work for you, and paying more to rebook on a big airline might be worthwhile, French said. Some airlines are taking advantage of a provision in the new Transportation Department rule that defined a significant delay as 3 hours for a domestic flight and 6 hours for an international flight. According to Brett Snyder, who runs the Cranky Flyer website, airlines that previously issued refunds for shorter delays, Delta, United, and JetBlue, for example, are now using the government standard. Delayed flights increase the risk that bags will get lost. Passengers who get separated from their bags should report it to the airline and ask what the airline will cover. Links to the customer service plans of major U.S. airlines are at the bottom of this page, and I'll read those. Airline fares were up 4.7% in November, compared with a year earlier, according to U.S. government figures. But early 2025 is a good time to start planning next year's trips, including for spring breaks and summer vacations. Because travel is so popular, you're not going to find anything that feels very rock bottom, but January and February are great times to plan for March, April, and May. Laura Mata, an editor at a travel guide publisher, Lonely Planet, said. If you want to go to Paris in the spring, you need to be thinking about that in January. And let's see here. I'm not seeing that list that they had promised. I'm going to keep moving here with more national news inside the Herald and Review. We have another Associated Press story here by Jonelle Alessia, and with the headline, Definition of Healthy Foods Gets an Update. Packaged foods in the U.S. will have to follow new rules in order to call themselves healthy, according to changes finalized by the Food and Drug Administration. It's an update of the agency's definition originally devised 30 years ago. The move is aimed at helping Americans navigate food labels at the grocery store and make choices that are aligned with federal dietary guidelines in hopes of reducing rates of diet-related chronic disease, the FDA said. Under the rule, products that claim to be healthy must contain a certain amount of food from one or more food groups such as fruit, vegetables, grains, dairy, and protein. And for the first time, the rule sets certain limits for added sugars. Foods must also limit sodium and saturated fat at levels that depend on the type of product, the FDA said. The change banishes foods such as sugary cereals, highly sweetened yogurts, white bread, and some granola bars from bearing a healthy label, while allowing foods such as avocados, olive oil, salmon, eggs, and some trail mixes to use it. Even water can now be labeled as healthy, the agency said. It's critical for the future of the country that food be a vehicle for wellness, FDA Commissioner Robert Califf said in a statement Thursday. Improving access to nutrition information is an important public health effort the FDA can undertake to help people build healthy eating patterns. The new rule will take effect within 2 months, and food manufacturers have until February 2028 to comply. A label that designates certain foods as healthy is still being developed, FDA officials said. Under the previous rule, about 15% of products were eligible for the healthy designation, but only 5% made the claim. First proposed in 2022, the change is a much-needed update to horribly outdated guidance, said Dr. Darius Mozafarian, director of the Food is Medicine Institute at Tufts University. Big picture, this is a huge improvement from a 30-year-old outdated definition based on 40-year-old science, he said. The new rule acknowledges that dietary and nutrition knowledge has progressed over three decades and that the previous definition didn't jibe with dietary guidelines that are the cornerstone of federal programs and policies. Consumer Brands Association, a food industry trade group, said the new rule stands to exclude some packaged foods despite countless years of industry innovation to provide healthier options. Sarah Gallo, an official for the group, said it's concerned with the new rule is not based on clear and unambiguous scientific evidence and doesn't fully consider the full potential economic impact on consumers. The updated criteria are based on data that could improve public health, including diet-related chronic ailments such as heart disease and diabetes, the FDA said. More than three-quarters of Americans have diets low in vegetables, fruit, and dairy, according to the FDA. Nearly 80% exceed limits on saturated fat, more than 60% exceed limits on added sugars, and about 90% exceed limits on sodium, all limits that can reduce chronic disease. We have another story here looking at Elon Musk the headline reads, Musk ascends as force by tanking budget deal. So this is more on Elon Musk. This is an Associated Press story by Thomas Beaumont. In the first major flex of his influence since Donald Trump was elected, Elon Musk brought to a sudden halt a bipartisan budget proposal by posting constantly on his X megaphone and threatening Republicans with primary challenges. The social media warnings from the world's wealthiest man preceded Trump's condemnation of a measure negotiated by GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson, which effectively killed the stopgap measure that was designed to prevent a partial shutdown of the federal government. While Congress finally did reach an agreement to keep the government open late Friday night, Washington was scrambled a day after Musk's public pressure campaign. Trump on Thursday declined to say if he had confidence in Johnson, telling NBC News, "We'll see." And there was no clear path to keeping the government open by beyond Friday, raising the specter of a government shutdown heading into the holidays. Congressional Democrats mocked their GOP counterparts, with several suggesting Trump had been relegated to vice president. Welcome to the Elon Musk presidency, Democratic Republican Robert Garcia of California wrote on X. What was clear, though, is Musk's ascendance as a political force, a level of influence enabled by his great wealth. In addition to owning X, Musk is the CEO of Tesla and SpaceX. There's no doubt he does wield a lot of influence over Republicans right now due to his proximity to Trump, said Chris Pack, former communications director for the National Republican Congressional Committee and the Senate Leadership Fund. Pack also said Musk's threats pose potential risks for House Republicans, which will begin next year with a five-seat majority that will shrink temporarily because of Trump's nomination of some GOP lawmakers to administration posts. This isn't going to help pass the agenda if you're going to cost a bunch of Republicans in a very razor-thin moderate seats if you're going to make them lose in primaries, Pack said. All that does is give the keys to these districts over to the Democrats. Musk spent an estimated $250 million during the presidential campaign to support Trump, contributing heavily to America PAC, a super political action committee that deployed canvassers, aired TV ads, and reached voters digitally in battleground states. He signaled after the election he was willing to back GOP primary challenges to Republican members of Congress seeking re-election in 2026 who waver on Trump's appointments and agenda. He renewed the threat pointedly Wednesday. Any member of the House or Senate who votes for this outrageous spending bill deserves to be voted out in 2 years, he wrote on X. He also called it one of the worst bills ever written. Musk wasn't alone in fanning GOP anger against the bill, which included several compromise measures to get Democratic support in the Senate in the final weeks before Republicans take control of that chamber. Biotech entrepreneur and former GOP presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, who is Musk's partner leading the new Department of Government Efficiency, also posted against the bill, as did Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr. Musk played down his role at times, suggesting after some praise online, "All I can do is bring things to the attention of the people so they may voice their support if they choose." And the president-elect told NBC News he spoke to Musk prior to the Tesla CEO's first posts. "I told him that if he agrees with me, that he could put out a statement," Trump said. Throughout the day Wednesday, Musk replied to posts on X from Republican House members announcing opposition to the bill with words of thanks and punctuating their public commitments. And he took a victory lap after Trump came out against the bill. "The voice of the people was heard. This was a good day for America." I'm going to move on to another national story. This is on the CEO, United Healthcare CEO incident here, with the headline, "Anti-Terrorism Law in Play Against Suspect in CEO's Death." This is by Jennifer Peltz of the Associated Press. New York prosecutors are using a 9/11-era anti-terrorism law in their case against the man charged with gunning down UnitedHealthcare's CEO outside a Midtown Manhattan hotel. Luigi Mangione was indicted on charges of murder as an act of terrorism under a state law that allows for stiffer sentences when a killing is aimed at terrifying civilians or influencing government. If it sounds like an unusual application of a terrorism law, it's not the first time the statute has been applied to a case that wasn't about cross-border extremism or a plot to kill masses of people. Mangione, who was jailed on other charges in Pennsylvania, was transported back to New York on Thursday after his extradition hearing and is being held without bail. Federal authorities have added charges of 2 counts of stalking and 1 count each of murder through his use of a firearm and firearms offense. Murder by a firearm could bring the possibility of the death penalty. In state court, Mangione is charged with first-degree and second-degree murder counts that specifically refer to the New York law that addresses terrorism. Essentially an add-on to existing criminal statutes, it says that an underlying offense constitutes a crime of terrorism if it's done with intent to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, influence the policy of a unit of government by intimidation or coercion, or affect the conduct of a unit of government by murder, assassination, or kidnapping. If a defendant is convicted, the crime of terrorism designation boosts the underlying offense into a more serious sentencing category. For example, an assault normally punishable by up to 25 years in prison would carry a potential life sentence. New York does not have the death penalty. The state's highest court threw out a capital punishment law in 2024. Why do prosecutors say the state anti-terrorism law applies in Brian Thompson's killing? Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg put it simply, the intent was to sow terror. The Democratic prosecutor noted that the shooting unfolded early on a workday in a heavily trafficked business and tourist area, and he mentioned Mangione's writings while declining to get more specific. When arrested, the 26-year-old was carrying a handwritten letter that called health insurance companies parasitic and complained about corporate greed, according to a law enforcement bulletin obtained by the Associated Press. New York Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch has said that Mangione also was carrying a gun that matched shell casings at the crime scene. Investigators say ammunition found near Thompson's body bore the words delay, deny, and depose, mimicking a phrase some people use to decry insurers' practices. Deputy Commissioner Rebecca Weiner said the reaction to Thompson's killing shows it fits with a law within a law against violence designed to intimidate a civilian population. The shooting prompted a wave of public criticism of the health insurance industry. Much of it is people sharing stories and frustration, but there also have been wanted posters targeting other healthcare executives. Concerned companies have taken top executives' biographies offline, canceled in-person shareholder meetings, and told employees to work from home temporarily. I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review shortly. Please stay tuned.